Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 427 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 19th of April, 2019, as I record this. So today I'm talking about how to pitch your book for film and TV with DJ Williams. Now, with the new streaming Disney service, Apple TV, the expansion of storytelling at Amazon and Netflix, and even here in the UK, we have a proposed BritBox, which is attempting to go up against those other services, and more content is needed. And you don't have to adapt your books into a screenplay in order to pitch them. So DJ and I talk about some really interesting stuff, and I've gone backwards and forwards over the years now. I've done some screenwriting, I've worked with other screenwriters, I've worked with agents, things have gone backwards and forwards. And we do talk about fiction primarily, but non-fiction is also really interesting. So biopics we've seen coming out, but also programs based on non-fiction books. For example, Brené Brown, who I'm sure many of you have heard of, has a new show. And of course, Marie Kondo was a great example of turning a non-fiction hit into a show. So I think there's opportunities in lots of different genres. So DJ and I talk about whether Taleflick, which is a new service, might change the game with its AI-powered search and heavy links into the industry. It's a really fascinating possibility for disrupting the existing process. So we talk about that more in the interview. And I have already uploaded one book to Taleflick and plan to load a couple more just to test the waters. I won't be putting all my books there. Obviously, a lot of our books are not necessarily good for adaptation to film or TV. As I discussed with DJ, my Map of Shadows, when I pitched it beginning of last year to an agent, he said, well, fantastic idea, but it's going to cost like $150 million to do that idea. So that is not going to happen as a newbie author. Why don't you write something low budget? He said, I just don't have a low budget brain. Anyway, if you want to check out Taleflick, I mean, obviously you can just go there directly, but you can also get $8 off your upload, which isn't very much, but hey, it's something. If you use my link, thecreativepen.com/Taleflick. Okay. And of course, as ever, links in the show notes. So on writing things, I am just shy of 50,000 words on Map of Plagues. And for me, that means I'm in the final stages of first drafting. I tend to write short and expand later. But, you know, I'm pretty, I write pretty, let's say, concise. I write concisely. So I know what's going to happen now. I am a discovery writer, but I do know what's going to happen. I just need to finish writing it. I'm also really going backwards and forwards on what I want to do about a third book in the series. Or do I make it a trilogy? Do I open it up to kind of a longer series? Do I need to close everything, tie everything together? Now, of course, generally, we like to do trilogies for fiction because we can then make them into a box set, and that's another product that we can sell, and really good income from box sets over time. They're kind of a different audience. So yeah, I mean, I think I want three, but at the moment the ideas for that third book are so far away for me that I'm not quite sure how to leave an open hook. But these are the fun things that we have to do when we write fiction. And yeah, I mean, making stuff up is the fun part. So also in kind of talking more about developmental stuff, I have booked to go to Podcast Movement in Orlando in August, which is the biggest conference and trade show for podcasters. Now, I'm not doing any speaking this year. It's my year off speaking, but I am doing a lot of learning. And as I've talked about many times, I'm really deep into audio now. I've got the new podcast, Books and Travel. I'm continuing to focus more on audio. And as I've mentioned before, I mean, our words can reach people through audio, not just through the written word. So I personally, my own learning and even stories, so I increasingly consume podcasts and audiobooks during the day. If I'm walking around, I just made lunch, I was listening to an audiobook as I was making lunch. I often read fiction in bed before I go to sleep. So that is, I read ebooks in bed, I listen to audiobooks during the day, and then I might read print at the weekends when I have reading time in my chair. And yes, I actually have scheduled reading time at the weekends. So as part of my sort of digital detox, I read print at the weekends, and that's mostly nonfiction. So I wanted to book Podcast Movement because I feel like, because I've been podcasting so long, over 10 years now, and I've never been to a podcast event. It's crazy. But because I learnt on the go, I've never really got out of the author niche and met other podcasters who are in different places. And of course, I want to see what I can learn and bring that to the new show, which over time will be selling the sort of JF Penn brand, Joe Francis Penn, as I am on Books and Travel. So yeah, I wanted to mention that I'm going to Podcast Movement in case any of you are. If you are, please do let me know now or closest to the time or whatever, and we will sort out a meetup, because I do know a few people already who are going, but I think that it will be pretty cool. And of course, I will anything I learn that will be applicable to you as authors, even if you're not podcasters, I'll share that. Because, of course, I actually think that going on podcasts is a great way to sell books. I think it's a super form of marketing. Right, let's talk about useful stuff. I've got three things for you in useful stuff. The first thing, talking about podcasting, is the Unemployable podcast is back. So it's just Unemployable on your favourite podcatcher. It is one of my favourite shows. Now, it's very much business orientated, so and it's not for authors. Again, it's for online entrepreneurs. The tagline is tiny business, remarkable profits, fulfilling life. And the latest episodes include Seth Godin talking about why the human angle is increasingly important as the roll forward of AI continues. And this is something, of course, I talk about a lot. And also the idea of seven-figure small. So how you can scale your revenue and your income without growing your overheads or your responsibilities. So, for example, not taking on employees. You don't have to grow your business in that way in order to grow your revenue, and also the focus on having an awesome life. And again, this is something I talk about a lot, the deciding what you really want, what are you willing to give up to get what you want? So if you want to make seven figures, what are you willing to give up certain aspects of your life in order to get that far? So really interesting podcast, Unemployable. I wanted to recommend that. Second thing, fantastic story bundle out now, and storybundle.com/writing, limited time only, so this will be disappearing middle of May 2019, so make sure you go and check that out. But basically, this one includes my own How to Write Nonfiction, Writing with Chronic Illness by Christine Catherine Rush, an online video lecture with Dean Wesley Smith on carving out time for your writing, four books in the Million Dollar Writing Series on productivity, professionalism, world building and collaboration by Kevin J. Anderson. And I'm actually reading this little box set at the moment. Well, it's quite a big box set, actually, reading the chapter on Dirty Little Secrets of Publishing, which is fascinating because, of course, Kevin has written hundreds of books. So is Chris. So is Dean Wesley Smith. I mean, these are big names. So I really love to find out things. I think these people, these wonderful authors who've been in the industry for so long, so, you know, 30, 40 years. They know so much that they don't know they know. So what I love about reading their books is that sometimes you just get these little nuggets that they throw off the cuff that perhaps you've never heard before. And I love that. I mean, I think we're all learners. That's why we love this. What else is in there? Killing It on Kobo by Mark Leslie DeFave is in there. Money-making business models for writers, growing as a professional artist, career planning, a book on marketing, and more. So it's if you haven't done a story bundle before, if you haven't bought one, it's essentially a pay what you like model, and some money goes to charity, and it's basically benefiting authors directly. So this is direct sales really through story bundle, and it's ebooks only. You can go to storybundle.com/writing to check out what books are available and hopefully find some of that useful. And the third useful thing this week, I am doing a webinar with Joseph Michael, the Scrivener Coach. Now, I know many of you have been on the webinars with me and Joe, and we always have an amazing time, and I always learn something new. I mean, interestingly with Scrivener, so I've written 26 books, I think, 26-ish, in Scrivener. I wrote my first book on Microsoft Word, and I don't know how I did it, because, I mean, Scrivener just makes everything so easy. I'm working in Scrivener at the moment for Map of Plagues. I would seriously struggle without it. I write my nonfiction in it. I think it's kind of even better for nonfiction, because you never write in order. You're always dragging and dropping things around. And yeah, but basically Scrivener is super powerful, and many writers don't use it in the most effective way. So this is a great webinar, because Joe, actually, I'm going to show you a couple of things that I do, and then Joe will go through some basic and then advanced and then really advanced tips for helping you use Scrivener in the most effective way, so you can plan your works, write faster, and keep everything under control, which is super important when you're writing these longer length works. So if you would like to learn to use Scrivener more effectively for your writing, come and join us Thursday, 2nd of May, 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK, or register for the replay. So just go to thecreativepen.com/May2, May 2, the number 2. So, because it's on May 2nd. So again, links in the show notes. I hope you will come and join us, because it is, even if you've been on the webinar before, it's one of those webinars that every time I do it, I learn something new. So you're welcome to come along again. So thanks for all your emails and tweets this week. Christine Bernard says, did my first solo walk in my new country today while catching up on some Creative Pen podcasts. Here's to new adventures and hopefully new ideas in Australia. And lovely to hear. And of course, I've moved countries a number of times. I've lived in a lot of places, but I spent seven years in New Zealand, 5 years in Australia. So over time, I've lived around the block. And I started writing in Australia and started this business in Australia. So I have fond memories of Australia. So all the best, Christine. Laura Bradbury, listening to your latest podcast while walking my rescue dog Pepper along the beach in Victoria, Canada, which is a lovely picture. Thanks, Laura. Edwin Downwards says, I sit in my corner of the cave looking at the stories I want to write while thinking about the message of the latest Creative Pen episode, where once again she talks about the why we do what we do. And Edwin, you're wonderful. You always tweet, and I love your tweets. But I found this funny, because once again I'm talking about the why behind what we do, because yeah, I know that's one of my soapbox topics, but it's super important. It's circling back to the seven figure small idea, and I mean, six figure small is good too, right? I mean, it doesn't need to be seven figures. I don't make seven figures, but you know, why do we do what we do? And I did actually have a bit of a realization last week. Well, this week, I guess. I've really lost track of what day it is. I was sitting writing in the cafe, and I just realized that I do what I do because I love creating. I really love creating. I just do. If you remember the episode with Damon Swade a couple of weeks ago on Verbalize, and he suggests coming up with a verb for your character, and mine really is create. You know, I am a create. I love writing, but more than that, I love creation. So that's why I love podcasting. I love getting the physical book into lots of different formats, because that's creation. It's not writing, but it's creating new things. So yeah, I think really considering why we do what we do is super important. Tomasthenes says 3.5 miles in 58 minutes, which is presumably running, listening to the podcast about autopsies and forensics. Good to keep you company as you run. And finally, get well soon to Dharma Kelleher, who's enjoying my new podcast, Books and Travel, while in hospital recovering from a painful medical procedure. All the best, Dharma. And yeah, get well soon. Today's show is sponsored by Publish Drive, and I'll play a word from them in a minute. This corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting, transcription, and editing of the show, but my time in creating the show is sponsored by my patrons. So thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Thanks to new patron, Helen Parker Drabble. And thanks to everyone who gives every month to support the show. I put out the monthly Q&A this week, so you get the extra something like 42 minutes worth of me doing Q&A on writing, publishing, book marketing, and creative business. I also shared some personal stuff, and I always share with my patrons first. So if you are a patron, you will get some more behind the scenes info. So if you haven't listened to that, go check that out. I really appreciate the support on Patreon, like the tweets and emails. It demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And remember, you can tweet me at the creative pen with a double M. So if you want to support on Patreon, you can give just a couple of dollars a month or a couple more a month if you're feeling generous, and you'll get the backlist of Q&A audio. So you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, here's a word from Publish Drive, and then we'll get on with the interview.
Hey everyone, Adam here with Publish Drive. The writing process is hard enough, so the publishing and marketing process should be easier. We here at Publish Drive help authors write more, publish more, sell more, and worry less. So, if you're an aspiring author, a new author, or even an experienced pro, here are three marketing tools to help you sell more books, all built into the Publish Drive platform so you can write more and worry less. Tool number one, reach more readers by going wide in your distribution. There's a huge market outside of Amazon, so get your books in front of as many readers as possible. Here at Publish Drive, our platform distributes ebooks to over 400 stores worldwide, including Amazon, Google Play, Apple Books, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, and many other retailers throughout the world, and now even in China. So you can now easily access a wider global audience. Tool number two, get your book listed and featured on the front page of retailers like Apple Books, Kobo, and others with Publish Drive's free featuring tool at publishdrive.com. And tool number three, boost the effectiveness of your Amazon ads with Publish Drive's built-in enhanced Amazon advertising tool. Skip the learning curve and use our platform to get the most out of your ads. So to recap, take your books wide in your distribution so you can reach a wider global audience. Get your books featured on the front page of retailers like Apple, Kobo, and others, and use our built-in enhanced Amazon advertising tool. These and many other features can be found at publishdrive.com. Like I said before, the writing process is hard enough, so the publishing and marketing process should be easier. We here at Publish Drive help authors write more, publish more, sell more, and worry less. Go to publishdrive.com and use the promo code CreativePen when you sign up and use our platform for free for 30 days. That's CreativePen at publishdrive.com.
Today, I'm here with DJ Williams. Welcome, Derek.
Hi, Joanna. How are you? Good to be here.
It's great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Derek is a TV executive, director, and producer with more than 400 episodes of broadcast TV syndicated worldwide. He's also the author of three novels, including The Auctioneer, described as Bourne meets Bond meets National Treasure, which is right down my alley in the action-adventure space. So, Derek, just start by telling us a bit more about you and your career in writing and TV and film.
Sure. After that introduction, I feel like I need a vacation. I feel like I've been working way too hard. I was born and raised in Hong Kong, so I'm an expat to some degree. Moved back to LA when I was 15. Ended up getting into the music business for a long time, producing records. I owned a couple indie labels. And then when iTunes came along, all of us had to revamp our career. Mm-hmm. And I got a phone call from a friend who said that they were shooting a pilot for a new show. And he said, I want you to come out and direct the pilot. And I said, well, I've never directed TV before. And he said, well, how hard can it be? Just show up, act like you know what you're doing. So I flew out to Indiana and we shot the pilot. And the pilot took off, and I think we're in season 16 of that particular show. And, you know, it was just one of those things. I said yes and took a risk, and it's been 12 years. I've been working in the TV world and very grateful to always have work, because that's one of the challenges, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, then it's really interesting because a lot of people romanticize the TV and film industry, I guess. And people be like, well, why would you write novels then? Why would you do that? So why get into writing novels? What does that give you that's different?
You know, when I was in the music business, everything from producing records to promoting and marketing the records or artists, I always kind of saw myself as a storyteller. And so whether, you know, music was the outlet at that point. Now on the TV side, we do a lot of unscripted shows, but you're still storytelling. You know, if someone's being interviewed, you're still trying to tell their story. But there was a point in my life where I was at a crossroads kind of in my career. And I found myself on the Zambezi River in a tent for 3 days with wild animals all around me. I'm a total city boy, so that was quite an adventure. And one morning I got up, I was looking out on the river, and I thought, we kind of back up just a little bit. We were shooting a documentary over there. So we had been there for 3 weeks filming, had seen all kinds of amazing things and met all kinds of amazing people. And that morning on the Zambezi, I looked out on the river and I thought, one day I'm going to write about this place. And I didn't know what that would look like, but I, you know, came home, and it's kind of how it is. You live one of those adventures and you come home and life's back to the grind, and you're working and you're doing all. I put it on the shelf for a while, and then I picked it up probably about 3 or 4 years later. And I thought, I'm going to write a novel, but I'm not going to tell anybody. And so I wrote the whole thing, didn't even tell my wife I was writing. She had no idea what I was doing. And when it was done, I sent it out to a friend of mine. Her name's Judith McCreary. And Judith was a co-executive producer on Law & Order, SVU, Criminal Minds, and CSI. And I said, Judith, if this is really bad, then the only people that will know this exists are you and me. And she read it, and she happened to be writing a script for, I think it was Lifetime at the time. About human trafficking. Well, the first novel I wrote had to do with human trafficking. And so she called me up a couple of days later and she said, you got to get this out. You got to do it. So that was kind of the push I needed to take that step forward. And, you know, it's actually a good outlet, because when we're doing the TV stuff, you know, you're with, you know, camera crews and a lot of guests, and you're, you know, we also shoot like pilots that we pitch to the networks, and you can be around a lot of people. And so when I'm writing the novels, kind of that's the exact opposite. So you're by yourself, and I kind of like that. So, yeah, it's been just a good kind of 1-2 punch, you know, for me.
Mm. And I'm interested because, of course, you said you were in the indie music scene as well. So how are you doing your publishing? Are you kind of indie through and through, or what are you doing?
You know, I had an agent and we pitched the projects. The first two books I wrote were not edgy enough for kind of a commercial house. And so with The Auctioneer, which is the latest book, that's very commercial. It's got all the, you know, checks all the boxes for a great action adventure story. So, you know, we shopped that around. The one thing I've learned is, you know, if you're looking for a literary agent, because I have a TV agent and it works for what we do. But with a literary agent, you need to find someone that specializes in the genre that you're writing in. Mm-hmm. And so I had an agent that specialized in a different kind of genre. So that was very difficult because they didn't necessarily have the relationships with the publishing houses. So we went through this for about a year, you know, them not being able to really get it in front of the right people. And, you know, going back to my background, like you're saying, I'm kind of an entrepreneurial guy. And so I thought, I'm not going to wait any longer, you know, so we're just going to get it out on our own. And part of that is learning kind of the Amazon ads, you know, with the first book, which is kind of funny. The first book, we built our own database of every customer relation manager at every Barnes and Noble store. And we started blasting out emails to everybody to the point where the corporate buyer out of New York called me up and said, okay, what's it going to take for you not to email our guys all the time?
That's brilliant.
And I said, we just want to do a book tour. So we ended up doing a 15 city book tour as an indie with Barnes and Noble. And, you know, that went really well. I learned a lot, you know, between actually doing the traditional kind of bookstore touring versus, you know, really dialing in the online platform. So yeah, it's been a learning process, but long story short, I feel like I'm kind of an indie. You know, if a publisher comes along or the right agent comes along, then we'll figure it out. But so far, it's working for us.
Yeah. And well, I think that's really interesting. And the waiting time is the big deal, I think, when you're used to just getting stuff done, which I think is the big frustration. But let's circle back to the TV and film, because I know people listening want to know about pitching and about the type of books, I guess, that even get optioned. So The Auctioneer is, you know, out at the moment with production companies. And you mentioned that the lady there who said, yeah, this is a great kind of fit. So what are your thoughts on how an author can get optioned, and also what kind of books should people try and get optioned?
I think, you know, it's because of the streaming services that are out there now. You know, for example, we just had a meeting the other day talking about a couple scripted shows, and everything from like a film to a limited series. And so that whole conversation, none of it had to do with pitching to cable or to the traditional networks. It was all going straight to Amazon, Netflix. When they first came out, the budgets were very low, so it was very difficult to pitch certain projects. But as we've seen in the last few years, because they're winning all kinds of awards, you know, their budgets are relatively equivalent to what you'll find at a studio or, you know, with a cable network. So that really opens up the doors for storytellers because, you know, they're looking for all kinds of stories. And so a lot of it has to do with, you know, the characters, the plot. You know, but I think it's wide open. Whereas before, you know, they would look for a certain kind of genre and everyone wanted that kind of a story. I think that's completely changing right now. You know, and I've seen that with The Auctioneer. The Auctioneer is out at a bunch of studios, a bunch of production companies. We've got a couple production companies that are very interested and in looking at it. You know, it's a little bit like going to Vegas. You know, you kind of roll the dice, and if you're lucky enough to get an option, that doesn't mean you're going to retire. You know, I think that's one of the big misconceptions is that people think, man, if I get my book option, I'm getting a six-figure check and I'm going to just relax. And that's typically not how it works. If a book gets optioned, the option period is anywhere from 12 to 18 months. And then usually what they'll do is they'll write in kind of an additional 12-month period. So if the book actually gets into production, then they'll option it for an additional 12 months, which, you know, they pay the author for both options, which is nice. But, you know, it's not necessarily six figures unless you're a best-selling author. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of how we've kind of seen it progress. And once it's optioned, the other thing is, you know, a few years back, I had the opportunity to sit with Joel Gottler. And Joel was, or still is, an agent out here in L.A. He used to represent Michael Connelly. He helped Michael get the deal put together with Amazon for Bosch. Mm. Now, Michael, for years, he had signed, when he first released kind of the Bosch series years ago, he had signed an option deal over to the studios. And I think that deal was for like 20 years, every book for 20 years.
Mm.
Not one of those books from the Bosch series ever got made into a TV series or a movie. It wasn't until Michael got the option back and kind of ran with it on his own that they were able to put a deal together. So, you know, but typically, you know, within 12 to 18 months, you'll know if anything is going to happen, you know.
Yeah, and that's a really important point. And I was going to mention there's a book called Hollywood versus the Author. Have you seen? Yeah. And Michael Connelly writes in that book about getting the Bosch back, and he had to pay the studio something like $3 million or $4 million for it. But luckily the Amazon deal paid off and Bosch is doing really well. But it was interesting because, of course, he's a very successful author who can afford that type of money. But it's fascinating because, as you say, having it tied up with an option doesn't necessarily mean it's going to go into production or that it's going to be successful. You know, so that's something that is really important for authors to realize, I think. In fact, lots of people get optioned, but very few things get made.
Yeah, because, you know, the flip side of it on the inside of Hollywood is sometimes they'll option a book if it's similar to something else that they already have in development. And so they'll option it not to do anything with it, but just to keep it off the streets. You know, they'll hang on to it so that it doesn't interfere with something else they already have in production. So I've seen that happen. And so, you know, I would say if you're going down that route, you know, as an indie, I don't know if you know, people listening, if, you know, if you have an agent, that's really great, a literary agent, because they'll be able to help kind of walk you through that. But my other advice would be if someone approaches you and it's, you know, Google's a great thing. You can Google the producer, the production company. You can look at their credits. You can see if they're really legit. And then if they are legit and they actually make you an offer, it's definitely worth spending the money to take it to an entertainment attorney and say, okay, what am I signing? You know, how is it going to limit me? And then the other thing that you have to do, which this could be hard for us creative types, you know, is as an author, typically when they option the book, from that point forward, if it does get into development or does get into production, you're hands off typically, you know. So I've talked with a lot of authors that are like, you know, I don't want to sign an option deal unless I'm a producer and I'm a writer and I'm all these things. And in a perfect world, that would be great, you know, but in reality, you have to be willing to let it go. You know, I listened to a really good podcast. I think it was last year sometime with John Grisham and Harlan Coben. And they were talking about kind of the whole thing with getting books optioned and everything. And they had the best advice ever. They said, look, if you can get an option, that's great. You know, walk away from it after you sign it. and get as much money as you can up front, you know.
That's, do you remember what podcast that was? Because I know people will want to know.
It was, I forget what it was called, but when Grisham did the book tour last year, like he hadn't done a book tour in like 20 years, you know. Mm. When he did the book tour, they recorded a podcast at every one of those stops.
So it might be his website or something.
Yeah, yeah, definitely go to his website because it's definitely on there. And he had like guest authors come in and they talked about all kinds of stuff from social media to the TV film thing and all that.
Oh, that sounds cool. Okay, so just circling back again. So do you, so one question, should authors, if they want to try and pitch to film or TV, should they be trying to adapt their novel or should they be doing something like a treatment or should they just be doing a pitch? And what, I guess, what do those mean if people don't understand?
Yeah, I would say your book is your best lead in. Depending on the production company, depending on the producer, a lot of times, you know, they may not have time to read a 300-page book. So what we've done is we'll send the book. I've got a 12-page treatment that is the complete story with all, it gives away everything, all the surprises, all the hooks, you know. I know, you know, sometimes authors are always like, I don't want to give them everything. It's like they need to know every detail in a summary form. Mm. And then what we'll do is we'll do kind of a one paragraph summary of the story with a tagline at the top, which is kind of our hook. So when we send it out to someone, because an agent will look at it differently, a producer, a director, an actor, a studio, everyone's looking at it from a different point of view. So sometimes the one paragraph deal is good enough to get you a meeting. But, you know, for a producer, they want to know, okay, I like the characters. I like kind of how the story begins. How's this thing going to flow out over, you know, 110 pages? Mm. And so give them the 12-page treatment, you know, or it might be less than 12, but for us, it was 12 pages. Give them that treatment and they can read that in 15 minutes and know, okay, is this something that we're interested in? The other thing we've done with the auctioneer is we've kind of set this up to kind of go the distance. So we're not only pitching it at, to studios for a film, but we're also pitching it as a TV series because I think the characters and kind of the way the story unfolds, it could definitely go, you know, 5 seasons, which that's the goal for those listening. If you're pitching a book to television, that story's got to go at least 5 seasons. Mm-hmm. You know, 100 episodes is the magic number because once it goes 100 episodes, then it goes into syndication. And what that means is now that show can get sold to other networks around the world. And that, as we call out here, is that's the gift that keeps on giving. So,
yeah, that, which sounds amazing. So I'm interested in the treatment there. I've done a little bit of this kind of thing. And with the treatment for a TV series versus a film, for example. So in the TV series treatment, would you be outlining your ideas for presumably not 100 episodes, but at least how that might continue over 5 series, because most people may have only written a couple of books or even one book. How would that treatment work?
Kind of the approach would be this, like if we're looking at TV and film. So with film, typically as you're writing the script, you'll have a 3-act structure to the film script. With the TV side, with a pilot, for example, that's a 5-act structure. So even writing those two, it's a completely different process. With television, you are really condensing things down. But at the same time, you're having to watch kind of your story arcs because you don't want your story arcs to happen too fast and run out of gas before the end of a 13 or 22 episode season. You know, so my advice would be with the pilot, I would take your book and say, okay, I want to write a pilot. So I'm going to write a TV pilot. That pilot's going to be about 52 pages. It'll have 5 acts, you know, and the pilot is introducing the viewers to your world, you know, the world you're creating, setting the stakes for what's going to happen in season one. And then it's also kind of introducing people to the characters, but not getting too deep. You just want to get them hooked just enough. So if you look at your book, that may only be the first however many chapters of your book, you know. But in addition to that, as part of the TV side, we put together what we call a show Bible. And so in the show Bible, we'll have character profiles, like very detailed kind of history on the characters. For season one, we'll write episode summaries. So say it's a 13-episode season. We'll write a summary for each episode. Just tells you, here's basically what's going to happen. What that helps a studio look at is, here's the overall story arc for season one. And then what we'll do is we'll write, it's kind of like a treatment. We'll write a treatment for, here's the overall arc of the entire show. And so here's how we go to to season five. And it's not necessarily giving away detailed plots, because you may not know what those are, but we know the main characters. So like in The Auctioneer, the main character is Chase Hardiman. We know in season one, here's where you find Chase, right? He's an ex-covert operative. He comes back home to take over the family business, which is an auctioning company. Something happens in the pilot episode that throws all that, you know, kind of into chaos. But when we get to season five, here's where Chase is going to be in season five. And so they want to know that it's just not going to be a linear character the entire way through. They want to know that you've got the twists, the turns, the surprises, you know, what other characters will kind of evolve in those seasons. And a lot of times the pilot is enough to get you in the door. The other difference would be, like with film, you might write a script completely by yourself, you know, until you turn it into a producer, a director, they make some notes. In television, typically, you know, writers find themselves in a writer's room. And so you're in a room with eight other people that have completely different ideas than what you may have thought. So, you know, that show Bible is kind of a living, breathing document. But as an author who's pitching to these, you know, avenues, the one thing I've learned is the more that you can come to the table with, the better, you know. And this is where I take off the writer's hat and put on the producer hat, because if you can attach talent to it, if you can, if you can write a pilot script, you know, you have to, that's, everyone's got to judge that for themselves. Can they actually do it? You know, if you're coming to the table with those things, or some people come with a distribution, you know, opportunity, the more that you come with as you pitch the project, the more you can stay in the game. You know, like we said earlier, if you're an author and you sign an option, you're out of the mix. They're going to take it over. But if you can give them a reason for you to stick around, you know, like Michael Connelly's done exactly that. He's in the writer's room. He's figuring out how they mesh all of his books into a season on Bosch, you know, and he knows the characters so well, they want him when they're filming, because he's got Harry Bosch in his brain, you know, and so that makes him valuable. And so I think those are things for writers to think about, is if I do write a pilot or I have a book that I'm trying to option, what else can I bring to the table that will keep me in the room, you know?
If you want to go in the room. And I think that's
a big
something for people to think about, as you say. So let's assume, because I really got into this and part of me still really wants to write scripts, and I loved the drafts that I've done, but it's a whole new way of writing and a whole new relationship thing and a whole new networking thing. And so what I wanted to ask you is, there are a lot of Let's say there are a lot of services out there that will pitch supposedly for you. And over the years, I've seen a lot of these come and go, and some are good, some are bad, some seem a ripoff, some seem excellent. And there's a new one that, as we speak, has only kind of just come on my radar, which is called tailflick.com. Mm-hmm. And you and I just had a quick word beforehand, and I've submitted to it. It looks pretty awesome at a reasonable price, but I wondered, what do you think of Tailflick, and any thoughts on submission sites like that?
Sure. I would say, just out of the gate, there's three things that come to mind. The first thing is pitching traditionally, you know, you used to have to go through one of the big agents, CAA, William Morris. Mm. Getting in with those guys is nearly impossible unless you have a track record. So, you know, fortunately for me, over the years, I've met different people. You know, one amazing story, because not that I would say everyone should go out and do this, but just for the auctioneer, we went on LinkedIn, on my LinkedIn account, and we emailed a select group of producers, studio guys, to invite them to the release event. Now, out of that, I had two production companies reach out to me to read the auctioneer, and they're some of the ones that are in the mix. So you never know where it might come from, you know. And if you reach out kind of in not like an overbearing way, people are pretty open, you know. You don't want to send like five emails in the first week going, you know, can you get back to me? You put it out there, you see how they react. But with that said, you know, one suggestion for authors is, if you find a literary agent that has experience in the TV film side, that's a, you know, that's a bonus. But I also did tailflick.com because I wanted to test them out and just see kind of how the process worked. And up until now, I think the biggest kind of piece that was missing was, you upload your book, you upload all the information, but then you have no feedback. You don't know if you're getting hits on your page. You don't know if anyone's even looking at it, you know? So then you got to wonder, do I pay the annual fee, you know, when I don't even know what's really happening? Well, I've reached out to Tailflick a few times over the last few months and got a response. You know, each time they're great at responding. I think they're building the platform. So I think it's going to be evolving. And so their next stage is they're going to be releasing a new platform within the next couple of weeks. They don't have a final date, but it's on its way. And it's a marketplace where you can reach producers and screenwriters directly. Now, for everyone listening, you don't know how huge of a deal that is, because it's like I'm telling you, it's nearly impossible unless you have existing relationships. So this is a huge thing. And they're going to give authors the ability to write and promote your own pitch. So that means you can craft the pitch the way you want it. That pitch will then be visible to producers and studios to search. But I think the real big thing is the marketplace, where sure, you write the pitch, you put it up there. Now you don't have to wonder. Now you can actually follow up and do the things that you would do to try and get it in front of people. So, you know, from what it looks like on the outside, it looks like this change that they're making is going to be really good. So I would, you know, for $88, I would try it.
Yes. And as we record this in April 2019, that's the price. Yeah. But I bet you that won't be the price long term.
Yeah, so. No, no kidding. They're saying we're launching a new marketplace. And you're like, all right, what's that going to cost?
But this is interesting. So I have also done it. You upload the book and everything's fine. And then they ask for your log line and they don't prepare you for this. And I know many authors listening, you might have heard of a log line. People might have heard of that. But most authors have trouble crafting the back blurb or the sales description for Amazon, let alone a log line. So I wonder if you could maybe give us a, because as far as I understand it, the log line is pretty much the pitch and most, you know, most of it. So tips for a good log line, considering they allow, I think, 300 characters or something.
Yeah. I would say this. I go through a process with each of the books, or, you know, I think I mentioned with you, we've got, I've written three pilots that are making the rounds. And so, you know, writing the book or writing the pilot, yeah, that's a lot of work. That takes months, you know, if not years for some people. But once I get it done, it's like you start the compression. Mm-hmm. So I'll take the book, I'll compress it down to like that 12-page treatment, and then I'll compress it down to that paragraph. And getting it down to that log line, which is no more than two sentences, basically, that is probably the hardest process, because you're trying to figure out how do I tell them what the story is in two sentences. And so my thing would be is to take your author hat off and put your marketing hat on. And so you're trying to sell this now. Now you're trying to sell this to those people that are interested. So you got to think of how do you make it either intriguing, exciting, like all those emotions. And, you know, it could take you a couple weeks to write that log line. You know, I mean, there's really, I wish I could say there's like a formula and really easy way to do it, but I would do that. The other thing that we do that really helps, and you had mentioned it at the very top of the podcast, is, you know, the auctioneer. Think Jason Bourne meets James Bond meets National Treasure. Right away, someone can picture in their mind, here's what I'm seeing. And so I would almost write the two-sentence log line, and then at the end of it, which I did this on Tailflick, at the end of it, you write think, colon, and then think of two or three movies, TV shows, something that's current or very successful. And I would put those at the end of your log line, because for a studio exec or for a producer, that just cuts right to it, you know? So it's like Chase Hardiman, ex covert operative, you know, returns home to take over the family business and all chaos ensues. Think Jason Bourne meets James Bond meets National Treasure, you know?
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that, because I did a pitch at a thing, and the agent said to me, "Wow, that's a great pitch. That would cost around $200 million to make." And he said, "Maybe start with something that is a low budget, say a low budget horror." And that was an interesting response, because similar to you, I write kind of big scale books and I blow big things up. And that was really interesting feedback. So do you think that's a tip too? Like I've got like a lot of books now, and I've uploaded one to Tailflick, and I'm thinking of uploading another one, which would be cheaper. So is budget something to keep in mind?
Yeah, big time. I mean, that's what they're looking at. So even, you know, like when we write the books, where our imagination can go wild. Right. There's no limit. There's no budget. We're going to write the biggest, best kind of blockbuster we can. When you get into writing, say you're going to take that book and you're going to put it into a film or a TV series, the budget has to constantly be playing in your mind. So there's certain things in the auctioneer that would not make it into the film script, you know, and then there's even more things in the auctioneer that would not make it into a TV script. And why is that? Because of the budgets, you know. So if you come out of the gate, like you're saying, you know, you come out of the gate with a $200 million movie, well, unless you're, you know, a very successful screenwriter, unless you got a track record, everyone's looking at it going, oh, okay, I'm not sure. You know, you have the ones that do happen, you know, the Hunger Games, you know, some of those ones that hit. But look at the number of ones that don't.
But that was a big book first. Hunger Games was a big book.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, when they were first going out with it, you know, I could almost guarantee you they were pitching the book before it got released. Because that's typically how this works, even before it hits the shelves, because the publishers are going to leverage what the studios will do. So even before the book is out, that manuscript is making the rounds, because everything takes forever, you know.
Just on that, is that important? Because I noticed another field I was surprised about on Tailflick was the year the book was published. Yeah. So do you think new things are important, or do you think they'll be looking for stories in general?
I think it's just stories in general. Mm-hmm. Because say a book gets into production, you know, you've optioned it, the studios come up with the money. Now you've got to write the script and all that. That's, you know, that could be a 5-year process. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it matters so much when the book was released. I think for, you know, part of what they're going to look at, they might look at sales on the book, you know, so they want to know, okay, it came out in 2016 and it sold 100,000 copies. Okay, you know, that's decent. But what they're really looking for is they're looking for stories that are unique and are producible, you know, and like what you said earlier, the budget can play a big factor. And so, you know, what you might want to do, for example, with your treatment is, you know, the 12-page treatment that you send out, you may want to write two versions of that, you know, one for the film side, one for the TV side, you know, or if you want to go strictly film, write two treatments, write a high budget treatment, write a lower budget treatment. You know, because that's the, at the end of the day, they've got to be able to, you know, everyone wants to make money. The studio wants to make money. So, you know, they want to know that they want to leverage their bets that they're going to make their money back in a profit.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because, you know, often when we're marketing our books, we're thinking about the reader and we're trying to be in the reader's head. And what you're saying is you need to be in the head of the producer, the director, whoever's buying and what they want. And they want, you know, and they're not going to read the book, are they? They don't read the book. That's not what they do. So you have to pitch things in a way that they understand. Yeah. So any, we're almost out of time. I feel like I could talk to you for ages about this stuff. Any anything else that you think authors should know about this kind of pitching process or what happens next?
You know, I would say on the writing side, that's probably the biggest thing is you've written your book. And maybe that's just the way you write, you know. Don't feel like you have to write a pilot. You know, a lot of times people think, well, I need to write the pilot for the movie before I get someone interested. I think what we've been talking about today, it's much better use of your time and it's actually can position you in a better way. If you write the treatments, you know, in the long form, short form, the log line, so that it's easy, depending on who you're pitching it to, you've got to be sensitive to that, you know, because they want to be able to get to it quick. So they're not going to, like you said, not read the whole book. But, you know, the flip side is if you do write a pilot and it's not very good or it doesn't technically, there's a lot of technical things in the pilot or the feature script that you have to know, like, certain things in a feature script have to happen on certain pages. So if you don't know that and you just write the movie and it reads kind of similar to like your book, when you send it out, that's your first impression. That's the impression they're going to get. You know, oh no, we've got an author now that wants to write a feature film, right? So you kind of have to decide what role you want to play. You know, and so I would say spend the time to really condense those down. And, you know, LinkedIn is a great way to find production companies and people that are out there, you know, search online. Almost all the production companies have some kind of a contact, you know, where you can at least talk to somebody, maybe not the decision maker, but at least find out who those people are. And what we did with the auctioneer is before it even got released, we sent out, I don't know, probably 50 books with exactly what I'm talking about to the studios, production companies. You know, another little tip would be, and this is a little bit of a longer shot, but it's worked before, is find actors, not necessarily the A-list actors, but find actors that are making their way kind of up the ranks, you know? So you're not at the Tom Cruise level, but you're at the Christopher Pine level, right? Most of those guys these days, especially with the streaming services, they have their own production companies. Mm-hmm. And so instead of going to a big studio like Warner Brothers or, you know, or Universal, you go to those production companies, because if that actor reads what you're sending and it gets them thinking, oh, this is something that I could star in and I can executive produce and I can get points on the back end, you know, they start thinking about the business side of it. Mm. And they're bringing something to a studio that they already have a deal with. That's another way, you know, another way to do it.
Mm, super. Well, so many ideas coming out of this, and I know people will be excited. So where can people find your author site and your books and everything you do online?
Yeah, djwilliamsbooks.com. That's where all of it lives. And I'm working on the next one, the next sequel to the Auctioneer book already. And while we're shopping these pilots. So, you know, when you get turned down on the pilots, you feel a little better when you can write when you get home.
And as we said, it takes a long time. So just keep on writing.
Definitely.
So thanks so much for your time, Derek. That was great.
Awesome. Thanks, Joanna.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with DJ today. I certainly found it fascinating. And remember, you can get $8 off your upload if you use my link, thecreativepen.com/tailflick. Or of course, you can just go to tailflick.com. Now, as I said, I'm using the service. I haven't seen anything yet, but I think it's an interesting idea. So, and of course, this is ripe for disruption. This whole process is ripe for disruption. So next week, I'm talking about writing and marketing travel memoir with adventurer Alastair Humphreys, and we get into why you need to be vulnerable and share some of your more personal stories if you want to connect with people through your writing. And Alastair has certainly been instrumental in modeling this approach for me as I've started to bring much more of my personal side into books and travel. So look forward to that next week, and happy writing. I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.